Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Angie has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your jobs projects done well.
I absolutely love this because, you know, if you own a home, it can be really hard to maintain. It's hard to find people that can help you for a big project or a small. Well, whether it's in everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality, it can be hard just to know where to start. But now all you need to do is Angie that. And find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need. Angie has over 20 years of home service experience, and they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process. Bring them your project online or with the Angie app, answer a few questions, and Angie can handle the rest from start to finish. Or help you compare quotes from multiple pros and connect instantly, which means you can take care of just about any home project in just a few taps, because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this when you Angie that. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I.com.
The Trans-Amazonica Highway cuts a muddy swath through one of the densest jungles in the world. The road is tough enough during the dry season, but during the rainy months, the local Brazilians consider it impassable. Rivers flood the road, threatening to swallow trucks whole. Soaked by constant downpours, the powdery soil turns to bottomless sludge, the consistency of porridge. If a truck is unfortunate enough to get stuck in the mire, it will often be abandoned there for months until dry conditions return. In 1989, at the height of the rainy season, the various fanged and poisonous creatures of the Amazon witnessed a sight that locals thought to be so unlikely that there is an active betting market against its success. A convoy of sand-yellow Land Rover 110s, their bodies painted with the flags of 14 different countries from around the globe, slogging through the muck. This was the 10th anniversary edition of the Camel Trophy, one of the few driving events in the world where a rain delay was not a problem. It was the whole point. The organizers had purposely picked the rainy season for the timing of the event, which was part competition, part expedition, and in their minds, the more difficult the conditions, the better. The drivers were amateurs selected from over a million applicants worldwide. The event was not quite a rally, not quite a race, not quite a series of technical challenges. It was an adventure nicknamed the Olympics of 4x4. On one particularly brutal day, the convoy of Land Rovers covered just 800 meters of distance. What made the Camel Trophy so iconic? How does it tell the story of Land Rover's evolution as a company? And could it ever stage a comeback? Now showing in the Pass Gas Drive-In Theater, Indiana Jones and the Range Rovers of the Lost Ark, the Temple of Vroom, and the Camel Crusade. The adventure starts now.
Pass Gas Podcast. It's about cars, it's not about forts.
I used to do a little thing that I called the Olympics of 4x4, except it was at In-N-Out. Yeah.
Animal style.
I have a heart condition. Yeah.
Nolan, that should be your catchphrase. Animal style.
Animal style. Be kind. Animal style.
Yeah, welcome to Past Gas. I am your host, Nolan, joined by my other hosts. We got James Pumphrey.
I eat pieces of like you for breakfast.
Whoa. And Joe Weber.
You eat pieces of
No.
And today we are talking about the venerable Camel Trophy, a topic of which I have a complicated view of, I would say. I've got opinions on it.
Yeah, it seems like similar to Cannonball a little bit, like a bunch of rich white guys patting themselves on the back for being brave, but it's really just like,
we're here to prove everyone wrong. It's like, no, everyone is on your side.
Yeah, the world is literally yours.
Yeah.
Stop trying to pwn people with your hobby.
When I was a kid, you know, you'd watch National Geographic, and I remember that Land Rovers would always be like the expedition vehicles of every program you'd watch, right? But
it's always the camera car for Top Gear.
I always think of them as like the UN vehicles too.
UN vehicles as well, yes. Quite capable. I mean, obviously very capable cars. They were chosen for a reason.
The Queen drives one. The Queen of England drives Land Rovers.
I think like all the, like the expeditions, like the National Geographic, the UN, you know, just being like the official car or one of an unofficial car of royalty, you know, are like all unintentional marketing, you know, it's free advertising, right?
Yeah.
Camel Trophy is the opposite. This was like an explicitly orchestrated marketing event that also was kind of a race, but not really. There were points awarded, but it like didn't really matter if you won because you're really there to have like an adventure of a lifetime while also trashing local roads. It seems like we'll get into that a little later.
We went to 4x4 festival, which turned out to be a big farce. It wasn't a real festival that people bought tickets to, even though they build it like that.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's talk about this real quick. This was before quarantine, right? This was a few months before shutdown or lockdown.
Yeah.
Correct?
We got an email from a marketing agent. And he was like, we have a bunch of free tickets to this 4x4 festival put on by Land Rover. And like,
it was the same place that they throw Coachella.
Yeah.
It was,
in Coachella. And you guys showed up. You guys showed up, and what did you see, Joe?
Well, we realized really early on that it was just we just had driven 2.5 hours to go to a Land Rover dealership that was out in the desert. But the coolest part was they had set up a little course for you to test the new Land Rover Defenders on, and that was actually really cool.
Yeah, and Anderson .Paak played.
That's right. Yeah. They had Anderson .Paak. I didn't go, but like I remember seeing the lineup being like, what?
And the Growlers. Wait, it was like a decent lineup.
Well, it was like us and then
like 30 other people.
Lead sales guy at a bunch of Land Rover dealerships. And they were all like, Anderson, what? Like it was just like, it was like somebody our age. Like the lineup was like so like 30s white dude playlist. And then like
perfect for us.
Yeah, all these like 60-year-old dudes were like free tacos, I guess.
It was very strange. Is Anderson .Paak related to Tupac?
Looks like it.
But we did see one of the original Camel Trophy defenders there, and it was really cool. I have a picture. Bridget, can you put that up right here?
That's right. So this was just a roundabout way of getting to the point. Camel Trophy cars are sick. And I did actually find a couple of them for sale. And we're going to get into why a different kind of corporate fun made these cars so cool. In the early 1980s, the concept of adventure was having a moment. The Indiana Jones trilogy had debuted in 1981, making exploration and khaki cool for kids and adults around the world once more. Beyond pop culture, the world was feeling like an increasingly international place. There's a reason why We Are the World was a hit song in 1985. Globalization was a massive economic force, revolutionized by advances in transportation and technology. Through the 80s and 90s, international events like the fall of the Berlin Wall and the advent of the internet and increased global wealth were all part of a slew of forces that were changing humanity for better or for worse. In some ways, adventure stories were the perfect solution. On one hand, an acknowledgement of an international future, and on the other, a nostalgic look backwards into the past, a desire for meaning amongst the ruins of lost civilizations and ancient ways of life that were getting left behind.
I feel like this same kind of thing happened in like the 1920s when like Egyptian culture got really big, and like there's just like waves of, you know, globalization.
For sure. And that's where it, like, through the 30s and 40s were the rise of like the adventure serial comics, you know, which would later influence
Indiana Jones.
George Lucas and Steven Spielberg when they made Indiana Jones. Cars weren't immune from the globalization trend either. In the 1960s, the big three American companies controlled 93% of the market. Today, that number is less than half, around 45%. By the 80s, car companies increasingly wanted to be seen as international brands with global reach, and their advertising often reflected that. The same principle applied to other global... Sorry, loud exhaust. Straight pipe VQ. That same principle applied to another global industry, tobacco.
Dude, you're like a car whisperer.
I think I just live in a neighborhood where everyone has straight piped VQs.
Straight piped VQ is a pretty safe bet.
Although the Camel Trophy is synonymous with Land Rovers, the event started not with the British car company, but with R.J. Reynolds, a tobacco company. Just like cars, cigarettes were international too. And one of R.J. Reynolds' brands, Camel Cigarettes, was looking for ways to reach markets around the world. The first Camel Trophy in 1980 didn't actually involve Land Rovers at all.
You know, I think it's pretty messed up that Ryan Reynolds hasn't acknowledged that his products kill millions of people a year.
Hey, whoa. We can't piss off RR, Mint Mobile, proud sponsor of Pass Gas. Let's be careful.
Okay, Daddy Ryan. Sorry.
Yeah, no bits about Daddy Ryan. Off limits.
Daddy Rye. We're sorry.
The Camel Trophy was conceived in the smoke-filled offices of the West Germany division of the R.J. Reynolds Tobacco Company, the owners of the Camel cigarette brand. Reynolds put Andreas Bender, a 27-year-old West German hired by Camel, to put on a promotional event. The goal was simple, even if the task itself was monumental. Three teams of West Germans would drive nearly 1,000 miles through the Amazon jungle. As with future Camel trophies, the participants were contest winners. All expenses were paid, and they were required to be amateur drivers. Many of the facts of the first edition of the event have been lost to history. What's for sure is that instead of Land Rovers, the three teams drove Ford-engined Jeep CJs. Hmm. Part of the lore is that these Jeeps were rented from a local Hertz dealership, which is unverified but kind of hilarious if you imagine the teams returning the Jeeps in partially destroyed condition. Although the Camel Trophy is a competitive event, it's neither a race nor a rally. It's an adventure expedition, which had different conditions for winning throughout its two-decade existence. The most clearly competitive part of the event are special tasks. Stuff like balancing on top of a teeter-totter made of logs. orienteering?
Yeah.
Orienteering challenges and car maintenance. I guess it's because they're driving Land Rovers.
Yeah. Maintenance.
We'll just make maintenance part of it.
It's a challenge.
Yeah. The most iconic part of the Camel Trophy, the actual travel through the wilderness, is not competitive at all. In fact, it's deeply collaborative, and the entire convoy is expected to work together to help navigate the treacherous conditions. It's like kind of like Survivor, it sounds like.
Yeah, let's just lay this out early in the episode. In like simple terms, okay? So like they have a start point, there's an end point, and like on their route, there are like certain stations that they'll get to every couple of days where they'll have one of these special tasks that they have to do.
Mm-hmm. It's like a reality show.
Somewhat, yeah. Like Survivor, like you said.
Yeah, so not somewhat. So you'd say like I'm spot on?
I would say you're spot on.
Great
I would
observation,
say that
James.
That you're a genius.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
It can just be a little, I don't know. I was a little confused at first. And then when I watched this 90-minute documentary, which we'll probably get into more later when we talk about the era in which it was made, that helped clear it up.
But in between the challenges, there's some really rough terrain and everyone sort of like helps each other traverse the rivers and stuff like that. So I think that is pretty cool.
It's awesome. And the fact that these people were amateurs, like not professional drivers, actually makes it so much more impressive because these guys will like the fact that it was like all marketing basically doesn't take away from the fact that like Land Rover really believed that their product could get people out of like these extremely dire situations. Like there was never like an easy button to like, there was no like eject button to get people out of like their car's Amazon? Like literally up to its like windowsill in mud, you know?
Yeah.
Like they had to dig those cars out.
Yeah. They're just smoking cigarettes the whole time.
Yeah. I watched just a little bit of that documentary, but I want one of those Camel Trophy expedition outfits.
Yeah, just tan linen. I know, everyone had like the same outfits, which I thought was hilarious. Anyway, sorry, let's keep going.
That first year, the plan was to drive across the Trans-Amazonica, starting on the Atlantic coast in the city of Belém. And I apologize for that pronunciation. They would then wind their way westward towards the middle of the South American continent. The first issue was not the rain, but the opposite of rain, dust. With the crew members being forced to wear masks, wonder what that's like, to stop their throats getting clogged up with dirt. The road was jagged with cracks, sending gear flying out of the jeeps that had to go get picked up. The drivers would show their ability to improvise in what would become a theme for the Camel Trophy. At one point, cartons of cigarettes were used to pay for ferry passage. And they were also a handy giveaway to deal with local policemen along the route who expected bribes. A gold rush in the town of Maraba had led to the town being packed with tens of thousands of prospective miners, desperate to find beds to sleep in. Two of the mechanics found rooms at a local brothel.
I'm sure they did.
Yeah, I'm sure they did. Safe to say that more sleeping quarters were not the only thing being paid for on the trip. The expedition's doctor, one Jürgen Aschoff, had to give one of the photojournalists a shot of penicillin to treat a nasty case of gonorrhea he'd come down with.
Damn.
By the end of the journey, the jeeps were spent. One had actually caught fire at one point.
Not surprising.
The supports for the soft tops had sheared off from the brutally bumpy roads, leaving the drivers and their gear fully exposed to the elements. The drivers had failed to finish the route, traveling about 850 of the 1,000-mile road. Still, their exploits had attracted international media attention. The winners were the team of Klaus Karthner Dirks and Uwe Machel. Camel was delighted at the wave of press, and it was immediately decided that the Camel Trophy would become an annual event.
Hey, man, we didn't even make it, and someone got gonorrhea, and our car's caught on fire. Let's do it again.
Let's do it again. I just think it's so fun. Like, I just picture, like you win this contest, right? That was probably, like, in a magazine.
Yeah.
Right? And then they're, for like, sure. You show up, and there's just, like, these jeeps full of cigarettes. Just full of, like, a carton of cigarettes is this big, you know?
Yeah.
And just, like, full of cigarettes. And then they're like, all right, go drive through that jungle.
Yeah,
like,
some West German guy's like, this is your supplies, but it's also your money. So.
All right, 1981. For the Camel Trophy to continue, Camel Cigarettes needed help in the form of an automotive partner to provide vehicles for the expeditions instead of renting them from Hertz. There's no way that Hertz gets the cars back. And there's no way that they didn't pass inspection.
Did you guys put a Ford engine in this Jeep?
Anyway, they're looking for a partner. The potential benefits for the auto company were obvious. If you look up earned media in a marketing textbook, the Camel Trophy could fill a whole chapter. Land Rover was a natural fit. James, can you explain earned media real quick?
We use it a lot in meetings, but I'm not quite sure I'm a authority on it. We should get Hannah in here to explain earned media. I mean, doesn't it mean like cool by association, essentially?
This is from a blog on HubSpot. Earned media or earned content is any material written about you or your business that you haven't paid for or created yourself. Yeah, so like if one of our videos going viral and then like the sponsorship in it, you know, that'd be like earned media. That would be an example of earned media, I think.
Yeah, like when Nolan ranked all the Fast and Furious cars and it was on Hypebeast.
Exactly. Perfect. So, Land Rover was a natural fit. The brand had its beginnings in 1878 as the Rover Company, producing both motorcycles and luxury cars. After converting to producing plane and tank engines in World War II, the company adopted the Land Rover Marquis in 1948 and began producing four-wheel drive off-road vehicles with a boxed frame, vehicles that would become the brand's trademark and a popular choice for rural farmers in the United Kingdom.
So you could hose them out. You could hose out all the sheep.
Yeah. People think they're like super high-end. Oh, they are high-end now, but they did start out as just like completely utilitarian British farmer vehicles.
Yeah, more of like a tractor than a passenger car.
Yeah.
In that way.
Yeah, yeah. The only passengers is my sheeps and all they sheep.
Hey, get in the back, sheeps.
Get in the back, sheeps. Oh, gotta take this sheep down the road to the doctor's office. She's got worms.
Rover was absorbed by British Leyland, which failed in the 1970s, consequently, but Land Rover would live on. By 1978, Land Rover became its own company. By now, the company had built much of its brand on a reputation for enabling adventure and exploration. Before the Camel Trophy, the best example is probably the 1972 British Trans-America Expedition, a publicity stunt where a team of drivers and mechanics started in Alaska and drove south 18,000 miles to the southern tip of Argentina.
Sounds like a Gears and Gasoline series.
The trip only took 96 days. That's pretty amazing. And the image of the navy blue rovers kitted out with auxiliary lights and a giant aluminum ladder braces designed to bridge soft terrain did a great deal to bolster the brand. Probably earned them some earned media as well in newspapers and all that.
That's pretty good. 18,000 miles in 96 days is 187.5 miles per day. That's pretty good.
Not bad.
Yeah, it's really good considering a lot of that is like through a river.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
The 1981 Camel Trophy, the first with Land Rovers, would take place in Sumatra, an island of Indonesia known for its tropical terrain, dangerous wildlife, and active volcanoes.
And great single-origin coffee.
Yeah, I was about to say they got great coffee in Sumatra.
It was conceived as a scaled-down tropical island version of the Trans-Americas Expedition, with the team starting in the town of Barastegui, if you're from Sumatra, I'm sorry, in the north of the island and traveling 1,000 miles to the southern end of the island. In the course of the journey, also crossing from the northern hemisphere to the southern hemisphere. For this event, Land Rover provided a platoon of Range Rover V8 3-doors painted in the iconic sand yellow of the Camel brand. That's called Fusion, dude. Brand, yeah. Fusion.
There are so many cool Range Rover special editions from the 80s, and I'm never going to own any of them.
According to one account, the event was, quote,
marked by extreme heat, sloppy mud, massive river crossings, makeshift bridges, huge quagmires, and lots of mesquites.
Hey, huge quagmires. That reminds me of the time in 1999 when I went to go see the Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade and got run over by a Family Guy balloon.
Nice.
Gotta throw Tommy a bone once in a while.
The roster had been expanded to 5 teams, but once again, they were all West German. Karen Stoppa and Annelies Waldorf would be the first female team in the event's history. Although it was Christian Swoboda and Nuth Mentel who came away with the trophy. Those are some names right there.
Yeah.
Well, I shouldn't have done a British accent then. I should have done a German one. My name is Nuth Mentel. What?
Nuth Mentel is my name.
The 1982 event saw the identity of the Camel Trophy receive its key component in the form of international teams. In addition to West Germany, there are now 2 teams apiece from Holland, Italy, and the United Estados. Once again, the location was Southeast Asia, specifically the island of New Guinea. The 1982 expedition is perhaps best known for a photograph that would become among the most iconic of the Camel Trophy. It's that of a mud-spattered Camel Trophy Range Rover parked in what appears to be a clearing in a jungle village. Atop the rover's hood and roof rack sit and stand about a dozen New Guinea natives coated in white mud and naked except for loincloths, as well as enormous clay masks with comically cartoonish faces and contorted expressions. These are the Asaro Mudmen, who according to legend were defeated by an enemy tribe and forced to flee into the Asaro River. When they finally emerged and attempted to flee, they were coated in mud, terrifying their enemies. An incredible story. Only a decade later, it would turn out that none of it was true.
What? Damn
it. Yeah. Danish anthropologist Ton Otto published a paper on the Mudmen that indicated that the costumes, as well as the origin story that went with it, had been invented whole cloth by the Asaro villagers in the 1950s as a performance for visiting tourists.
Awesome.
The true story is even more interesting than the myth, and points out some uncomfortable themes about the Camel Trophy and of adventure tourism in general. For one, the countries these expeditions were entering were real places with real history, often troubled history. But often they served as more of a backdrop for the competitors, predominantly white men dressed in the same safari clothing as their colonial predecessors. What does it say that the locals were savvy enough to realize what these men wanted from them was a playful narrative designed for a photo op?
I just like watching the documentary, very generous term for this hour and a half film.
Was it more of a cigarette commercial?
No, I didn't actually see anyone smoking any cigarettes the whole time. The film opens, there's like a really flashy, like 1 minute intro of just Land Rovers, like doing cool shit. And then like the British narrator is like, Our story begins in 1989. And then it's just like immediately, like they're in Brazil for that year. And then it's just like a close up of like a girl's ass.
Sick.
Yeah.
No, I mean sick.
Dick. That's where poop comes out.
Yeah, it's where the poop lives.
But that was like kind of something I was thinking about the whole time is like they're by the 80s, like late 80s and early 90s, they had like 30 of these trucks going places, and like they're just tearing through the countryside, like these national parks and shit. I'm just imagining, like, if they did like a Camel Trophy of the US and they're just like tearing through Yosemite or like any other place where we're like, hey man, don't do that. Like, that'd be like such, you'd be such an asshole. But they're like going through these countries, just like, all right, we gotta like make a bridge to make sure our Land Rover can cross this.
All right, looks like there's a village in the way of our Land Rovers. Let's turn their houses into bridges.
It's just like, of course they did like go that far, but like, it's, you know, it was a bit much, I think.
Yeah.
So the Camel Trophy was a fantasy organized by two corporations to sell their products. The myth building of the Mud Men was the same as the myth building of Camel and Land Rover. Both myths catered to affluent Western consumers. Only one story was cooked up in the offices of R.J. Reynolds, while the other was invented on the banks of the Asaro River.
It's also pretty fun. Not fun. It's pretty just like that film is such a product of its time. In one of them, they're in Borneo. They're like going, of course, up like some trail. And then like the narration is like a local woman stops to gaze upon the machines that she's never seen, something like that. And it's just like, dude, like she's probably seen a car before.
Yeah.
You know,
I mean, Borneo is where the Sultan of Brunei lives, right?
Close by. That's right.
Yeah. So she's seen a lot of cars.
Spurred on by images, is 1983 now. We're heading into 1983. Spurred on by images of the Asaro Mudmen and the sand yellow rovers navigating rivers and mud, the Camel Trophy made its first trip to Africa in 1983. The event was held in Zaire, then under the power of one of history's most infamous dictators, Mobutu Sese Seko. In the 90s, the country would descend into war, but for now, Mobutu hoped the international headlines the Camel Trophy attracted would bring some glory to his economically challenged country. This Camel Trophy marked the first and only appearance of the Series 3 Land Rovers. They were equipped with standard 2.25-liter diesel engines, but non-standard were the hot climate kits, included 8-bladed fans, dual fan belts, an oil cooler, and cooling fan shrouds.
This is the Land Rover from Ace Ventura.
Oh.
Getting hot in these rhinos.
Yeah, so this is definitely like the older style Land Rover. We're not to the Defender yet. That's cool, though. I'll dig that. I'd drive that for about a mile until it broke down. Am I right, guys?
Nice, dude. Yeah. Yes, you are right.
That's right.
Nice. We all own Land Rovers, and we all know how reliable they are. Not really.
Nice, Joe. Nice.
All right. Meanwhile, back in Zaire, the country's poor condition was shocking to the Camel Trophy travelers. The expedition's doctor administered free medical aid at villages along the route in what would become a Camel Trophy tradition. That's pretty cool. The infrastructure was so poor that it was a struggle at times to find adequate fuel for the convoy. And at one point, the teams had to clear out an overgrown dirt runway so a supply plane could land and deliver additional diesel. Disaster struck when a journalist tipped over an oil stove near one of the support trucks. The fire spread to the jerry cans of fuel, causing them to explode and the vehicle to be engulfed in a massive eruption of flames. Amazingly, though all the aluminum had melted off the body, the engine still started. And everyone, you know, the cigarettes that were inside also ignited and made everyone chill out for a little bit, you know. The Camel Trophy continued into the late 80s. Although there were exceptions, it was most frequently held in tropical regions defined by thick jungle, rushing thick rivers, and ooh, plenty of mud. It was Camel Cigarettes itself that pushed for events to be held in these settings, which they felt fit best with the overall theming of Camel's brand. Yeah, nothing says camel, an animal that lives in the desert, like a dense jungle.
I think it's resilience is their theme. Yeah, camels are very resilient.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. I'd like to see a camel thrive in a jungle, though. Look, I'm no zoologist. I'm at best a casual oceanographer. I'm a fan of water, but I don't think a camel is going to do very well. What's he going to eat? You know,
cigarettes.
What do camels eat in the desert?
Hey,
I have no idea, dude. I love this show is really like, I love our approximations and half knowledge on a variety of subjects.
Yeah,
such
it gets
as
us into trouble sometimes.
Yeah, it's good stuff.
We know just enough to sound real dumb.
For sure. Anyway, whatever Camel was doing, it was working. Nearly every year, the number of applicants grew, attracted by print ads and billboards that simultaneously advertised cigarettes while also soliciting applications for the event. You can bet your ass that I would have entered this contest for sure. I'm very unlucky, though, so I probably wouldn't have won. The number of teams grew as well, including more and more countries. The tougher the challenges, the more memorable the images.
We'll be right back with more of this story, but first, a word from our sponsors.
Angie has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your jobs projects done well.
I absolutely love this because, you know, if you own a home, it can be really hard to maintain. It's hard to find people that can help you for a big project or a small. Well, whether it's in everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality, it can be hard just to know where to start. But now, all you need to do is Angie that and find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need. Angie has over 20 years of home service experience, and they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process. Bring them your project online or with the Angie app, answer a few questions, and Angie can handle the rest from start to finish. Or help you compare quotes from multiple pros and connect instantly, which means you can take care of just about any home project in just a few taps. Because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this when you Angie that. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's ANGI.com.
You can host the best backyard barbecue when you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Most of the challenges were often dictated by weather. In Borneo of 1985, the entire convoy of Land Rover 90s, so named for their 90-inch wheelbase, mind you, gentlemen, was confronted by a road that had been fully washed out by weeks of torrential downpour. A helicopter was called in to lift each truck one by one across the chasm that had appeared, allowing the adventure to continue. One day on this trip, the convoy advanced only 300 meters from the previous day.
That's like three football pitches.
There were so many rivers to traverse that the convoy started to refer to their rovers as yellow submarines. Nice. Carlos Probst and Tito Rosenberg of Brazil kept spirits high by blasting samba music out of their Land Rover, winning the Team Spirit Award, which was that was another award. You could win the overall thing, but you could also win Team Spirit. Isn't that what counts the most? Let's see. Yeah, I remember from the doc, the Borneo, I mentioned that they were talking about the like native population or the locals, but then this section particularly, though, it's like they're trying to go down a trail that's like literally like 3 feet wide in these Land Rovers, which are not 3 feet wide. And they had to like machete their way through this brush. Like what I'm saying is the organizers were not f-ing around.
Yeah.
You know? But as we'll see later, they did start to fuck around a little bit, in my opinion. The next year in 1986, held in the Australian outback, was a relative breeze with largely favorable dry conditions. Although it was the longest camel trophy to date, coming in at 2,000 miles, the teams were about to cover 150 miles a day. 1987 saw a historical first with the events in the African island of Madagascar, featuring the first ever vehicular traversal of the island from end to end. Range Rovers were used for the event, and the timing was perfect for Land Rover's marketing efforts. After decades on the gray market in the United States, the vehicles were now being officially sold stateside for the first time in the British company's history. The event itself was a bit of a fiasco, though, with the teams critiquing the lack of clarity as far as the special tasks were and how points would be awarded. It led to the team of amateur volunteers who had been administering the event to be replaced with professional marshals in future contests, signals that the Camel Trophy's days of penicillin shots and cigarette carton bribes were now a distant memory. Unless you got herpes, because that stuff sticks around. Hey,
oh,
nice. You're listening to Donnie and the Germ on 98.8 The Ride. We got Kansas coming up, followed by Boston. You know, I'm trying to give you some peace of mind.
We've been around longer than herpes.
For the 10th anniversary of the Camel Trophy, the event returned to where it had all started. The Amazon jungle of Brazil.
Ah, this is where the documentary started with the butt.
Things had come a long way since three teams of West Germans had traversed the wilderness in rented jeeps. For 1989, when Taylor Swift is born, over a million applicants submitted entries from around the world.
That's amazing.
Yeah, she was born in 1989. Pretty amazing.
That is, wow.
Teams were selected from 14 countries. Nearly enough for an Animaniacs song. In alphabetical order, they were Argentina, Belgium, Brazil, the Canary Islands, France, West Germany, Holland, Italy, Japan, Spain, Switzerland, Turkey, the United Kingdom, and Yugoslavia. As we mentioned at the top of the podcast, this event was purposefully held at the height of Amazon's rainy season, and many consider it to have been the most grueling camel trophy of all time. Contestants averaged 4 hours of sleep, spending their days and nights constantly towing one another's Land Rovers out of mud holes.
Been there.
Get your toe out of my mud hole.
They were driving the Land Rover 110, so named for their 110-inch wheelbase.
I mean, that follows because the 90s were 90-inch wheelbase, and the 110s are 110. So
the victors were British brothers Bob and Joe Ives, the first British victory, which attracted massive media attention. They received enormous trophies shaped like golden pyramids. Given the British origins of Land Rover, it felt a bit like Greece winning the Olympics. The event and the flurry of press that followed is widely considered the peak of the Camel Trophy. As the expedition entered the 90s, many felt a bit of the magic was lost. 1990 saw a couple of major changes to the Camel Trophy. For one, drivers were now competing in the Land Rover Discovery.
The Disco.
Disco Stew.
Disco Stew. Land Rover had just launched the new model, also rebranding the Land Rover 90s and 110s as the Defender.
Hell yeah.
Do you know they call those cars those names because the wheelbase is as long as a Defender in the NFL?
That's pretty interesting.
That's how they measure it.
The length of that car?
Yeah.
It's a very short car. The Discovery featured the 200 TDI turbo diesel fuel injected motor.
This was the first mass produced fuel injected turbo diesel engine.
Interesting. 1990. 1990 was also notable for hosting the first event in the Northern Hemisphere. The expedition would travel through the frozen tundra of Siberia. It was the first international motorsport event held beyond the so-called Iron Curtain of the USSR, with promotional versions of the sand yellow cars driving through the red square of Moscow leading up to the event.
Yeah, this was super interesting. I mean, Russia has such like a complicated history as it is. But it, like, they're like teeing themselves up to like get back into like the world state, like almost to curry favor with like the capitalist West in that way. Like, hey, like, let's bring these companies into our country to show that we're cool with them, I guess. I don't know.
It like reeks of like PR.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they didn't go through like frozen countryside for this one. It was like during the summer. But still, Siberia looks pretty cool. I wouldn't mind going there in the summer.
In 1991, the event returned to Africa for an expedition through Tanzania and Burundi. An estimated 500,000 curious locals lined the streets of Dar es Salaam to watch the convoy depart on its journey. In the following years, the Camel Trophy was held in Guyana, Malaysia, Argentina, where the temperatures ranged from -4 degrees Fahrenheit in the Andes to over 100 degrees in the desert.
Yeah, so for Argentina, they almost did like the same route that Top Gear did, where they just went inland to the ocean. Mm-hmm. Land Rover or the Camel Trophy did that first. Super, like, it is cliche, I think, at this point, since Top Gear has done it. But that's something that I would like to try someday. It's like it's such a cool journey. You start in this dense jungle, you're cutting through mud, you're going through rivers, and then all of a sudden you have to like go up a mountain, and they stopped at like the top of an active volcano.
I would love to play around with some lava.
Yeah, just like hold it in your hands.
No, like drop a Coke can in it.
That'd be cool.
By now, the Camel Trophy, although still only open to amateur entry, had a series of intense qualifiers for those who wanted to compete. For instance, if you were an American wanting to compete in the 1995 expedition, you would have to be one of the 10 candidates accepted for the U.S. Camel Trophy trials held in Hollister, California. Among those accepted were a Navy SEAL that had served in the underwater demolition team.
Wow.
Bridget probably knows a little bit about UDT. That. So, but Dan is the opposite of underwater demolition. He's underwater
instructor.
Putting together. Yes. it also included 2 marathon runners. All the candidates also had extensive off-road and endurance driving experience. If you performed well and placed in the top 4, you would then qualify to advance to the international selection trails held in Europe. Win there amongst your country, and you could only then represent it at the Camel Trophy itself. Who's got the time?
Yeah, man. Like, this kind of... I don't like this as much. I like the win a... you know, get a golden ticket out of a pack of Camel yeah. Blues, you know, kind of aspect of it.
Reflecting the more humanitarian-minded global trends of the 90s, the Camel Trophy started to pivot somewhat from emphasizing exoticism to a more humanitarian slant.
Hmm.
In several years, the teams constructed research stations dedicated to conservation and took on aid projects along their routes.
Okay. We started out, you know, this started out very Teddy Roosevelt. Now it's becoming a little more Jimmy Carter.
I like how they're like, hey, we're going to help you with your gonorrhea. Here's a pack of Camels.
Yeah.
It feels like a weird message to send.
Yeah, yeah. Here's a malaria vaccine and a lifetime supply of unfiltered Camels. Yeah.
Here's $3 off coupons.
Camel was becoming less interested in the automotive component of the race and more interested in tying the trophy to adventure sports like biking and kayaking that were becoming massively popular by the mid-90s.
Oh, my God.
They're cigarettes! They had also launched the Camel Trophy clothing brand, which they called Camel Trophy Adventure Wear, which produced Patagonia-type gear, mostly in safari colors, as well as consumer goods like watches and belts. The brand also had a dual purpose. It allowed the clothing brand to sponsor events where tobacco sponsorship had been disallowed.
Ah, sneaky.
Mm. This was an increasing trend around the world as government regulators began to realize the negative health impact of these cigarette companies' massive marketing efforts. The brand's logo, clearly by design, was almost indistinguishable from the Camel Cigarettes logo.
This, like, this era of the Camel Trophy is like the most mid-90s thing ever. This transition is like so strange because like all of a sudden they have matching mountain bikes. And it's hilarious to watch. Like, they have to drive. Like, I think they did an event in Colorado, I think, at a ski resort. And they had to drive the Land Rovers up this mountain. And then they could choose to, like, kayak, snowboard, ski, or mountain bike down a section. And just to see, like, 30 people on mountain bikes trying to hit this trail at the same time is, like, hilarious. But also, like, it's just so confusing. I don't know. I just feel like the 90s were like that, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, action sports are cool. Let's see if we can just shoehorn this into any way we can.
Yeah. The 1998 Camel Trophy held in Tierra del Fuego, which stands for House of Fire?
Earth.
Tierra Earth of Earth. Fire.
Or land.
Dang.
The 1998 Camel Trophy held in Tierra del Fuego was the last year of Land Rover's participation. The year also marked a bookend in the brand's metamorphosis that had begun in 1990. They had launched the Freelander, the brand's first SUV and the first Land Rover with a unibody construction. Instead of a trip in a convoy, there was no shared route for the teams. Instead, they were encouraged to roam, earning points by visiting a set of 200-plus checkpoints spread around South America. The relatively lightweight Freelanders performed well, described by participants as fun, fast, and agile.
Ooh.
It looks like a CRV.
Yeah. It's like a CUV.
Yeah, I don't really like the Freelander compared to the Defender.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It was often the support vehicle Discoveries that got stuck on obstacles and had to be towed. But of course, that begs the question. If you're driving around in a little subcompact SUV and all your gear is loaded into a Discovery support vehicle behind you, you're kind of like a kid whose job it is to open doors while someone's moving heavy furniture.
Boom. Dang, what a diss. I also want to point out, like, the set of 200-plus checkpoints that we mentioned.
Are all Arby's. They were every single one was an Arby's.
No, but, like, James or Joe, one of you, earlier in the episode, you mentioned how it's like almost like a reality show or, like, Survivor. Like, it was like a Survivor-style competition where you have to stop at all these different challenge points along your route. This is where, like, Survivor came out a year before this last running of it, and I think they took a lot of inspiration from the show, because what they had to do, they had these GPS coordinates that they had loaded into, like, their GPS device, and they would have to, like, drive to a location, and usually, like, it was impassable by car, so they'd have to get out of the car and go to someplace like a big old tree or like a waterfall out in the middle of nowhere. And the Land Rover organizers would have placed, like, this little plate on the tree, which had all these different numbers on it, okay? And they were just, like, randomly dispersed, printed on there. And the competitors would place their plate onto this little plate that has been placed, okay? And to prove that they had been to this location, how their plate oriented onto the challenge point would reveal which number it is. And, of course, the Camel Trophy organizers had the predetermined codes, basically, for that proved that they had been there. It seems needlessly complicated to do this, though, compared to like how the competition used to be run.
Yeah. It's like, let's drive from this point to that point, and then next year it's like, let's do all this garbage,
all this weird stuff. Biking and, yeah, mountain and biking
stuff.
Exactly. So, and in the comments of this film on YouTube, like everybody's trashing on this these last couple of years because they're like, wow, they really lost their way. There's like dedicated fans for Camel Trophy, mostly Land Rover fans, of course. But I have to agree with them. This is corny as hell.
We call them Landies over here.
Discos and Defenders.
We'll be right back with more of this story, but first, a word from our sponsors.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Big thanks to eBay for sponsoring this episode of Pass Gas. Passion, drive, patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. We're talking superchargers, turbos, exhaust kits, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need for the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only, exclusions apply.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
The 1999 Camel Trophy had been planned for Peru, but the event was abruptly canceled when Land Rover withdrew. In a statement, Rover marketing director Martin Runicles said, quote, "We have enjoyed a unique relationship with the Camel Trophy event for almost two decades, and it has played a major role in sustaining the image of Land Rover as the manufacturer of the best 4x4s in the world. However, with the changing character of the event, it will no longer provide us with an active demonstration of Land Rover's brand essence. We wish Camel Trophy every success with their new format. As for Land Rover, future activities will concentrate on our customer base with the emphasis very much on rugged off-road adventure."
Yeah, it doesn't make much sense for a car company to stay in this competition that's less focused on cars and more focused on, you know,
on being like a Legends of the Hidden Temple kind of thing.
Yeah.
They changed it so much that the thing that made it cool no longer wanted to be involved.
Mm-hmm.
What was left unsaid was that an association with a tobacco company was no longer desirable for an automotive brand like Land Rover.
Mm-hmm.
As international laws regulating advertising took hold, even workarounds like Camel Trophy clothing were increasingly unworkable since their parent company was still RJ Reynolds, a tobacco manufacturer.
Daddy Ryan.
Yeah, that's right. What is Ryan Reynolds' middle name anyway?
Ryan Reynolds? Yeah.
But it's spelled different though.
Yeah.
Oh, I see. It's like R-I-A-N, like Ryan Johnson.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, cool. It's impossible to know what conversations took place in the Land Rover boardroom, but it's safe to say they saw the regulations being written on the wall and withdrew from the event before the issue was forced. Probably a smart move. It was part of a wave of these kinds of deals ending, the most prominent being the end of the Winston Cup in 2003 over in NASCAR. By the way, we are planning a whole episode on the relationship of tobacco companies in racing, so be on the lookout for that in the near future. For its part, Campbell Trophy came back for one more year of adventure in 2000.
The new millennium, baby. Y2K.
The 2000 event, held in the islands of Tonga and Samoa, went in a totally different direction. Instead of Land Rovers, the event returned with rigid inflatable boats or rib boats.
Rib boat of ribs sounds so good right now.
A big old boat full of ribs.
Ooh. Oh, yeah. Ooh.
On land, however, Land Rover Defender pickups were still used as support vehicles. The event generated some memorable imagery of a convoy of sand-yellow boats skimming over the Pacific, but Camel's attempt to pivot was a failure. Baked into the Camel Trophy's DNA was the legend of the mighty Land Rover, and ribs were no replacement, no matter how juicy or delicious. And thus, 2000 was the last year of Camel Trophy. How do you define the Camel Trophy? Was it the adventure of a lifetime, the chance for participants and audience alike to escape from reality and enter a world of epic challenges and accomplishment? Or was it little more than an Indiana Jones-themed billboard, a rolling photo op designed for the purpose of selling cars and cigarettes, the two great polluters of our planet and our bodies, respectively? Along the way, the Camel Trophy had tracked the progression of Land Rover from a company that produced utility vehicles to one that built luxury SUVs. Although the company's DNA had become defined in the Amazon, safe to say that its soul now resides in the enclaves of Beverly Hills and Dubai. It's part of the reason why such an event feels impossible in today's landscape. Still, the spirit of Camel Trophy is undeniable. The defenders, discoveries, and freelanders that drove in the expeditions are now collector's items that are highly sought after. Although, just a quick note, I'm not sure if I would want to buy one of these things, considering that a lot of them like rolled over and got beaten up and had to be repaired on the side of the road. However,
yeah, flood damage.
Enthusiasts inspired by Camel Trophy have organized their own adventure events around the globe, keeping the dream of exploration alive. Even now that the Camel Trophy is long gone, it's the images that stay with us. A hulking sand-yellow rover nearly submerged in muddy waters, traversing an Amazonian river. The convoy winding along a subarctic road in the dark Siberian night. The top rows of auxiliary lights blazing a path of soft yellow light through the wilderness. Vehicles mired in mud, getting winched forward inch by inch as crews leaned off windows like a sailboat, fighting for every pound of leverage. The flags of the drivers, respective countries, flapping proudly from the front left corners of their hoods. Whether it's a tribesman or a corporation, we're a species that thrives on creating mythology for ourselves. We seem to need these stories to help us understand ourselves as well. As globalization has made the whole world feel connected, we still have that urge to blaze a trail and create a new legend for ourselves. The Camel Trophy, for all its commercialism, gave people hope and excitement, or at least something to watch. And by the way, don't smoke.
And don't buy an old Land Rover.
No.
That would also be bad for your mental health, I assume.
Do blaze trails, don't blaze cigarettes.
Yeah, nice. That being said, Land Rover is a cool company. They make really cool cars. They have a really rich history. And if you want to learn more about them, check out the episode of Up to Speed on Land Rover.
Yeah.
On
for
our
sure.
Donut Media YouTube channel. Joe wrote that one.
Yeah, it was a fun one to write. Learned a lot. Yeah. I think Bridget helped work on that one. Yeah.
Nice.
This episode really makes me want to go, like, I want to go overlanding. I want to get an off-roader and go camping. You know, I want to have that adventure that we talked about, you know.
Nolan, you're going to get all the overlanding and adventure that you can handle next
Ooh.
Season on Hilo.
Ooh. Ooh. Thank you very much for watching or listening to Past Gas, however you consume this show. We always love doing it.
And let us know if you have like a crazy story that we should cover, because we always listen to our fans and we always read those comments.
Follow my lovely co-hosts and production team at their social media. You got at James Pumphrey, at Joe G. Weber. You got at Thomas Ouellette and at Bridget in a Box. She's got a lot of Volkswagens. Follow me at Nolan J. Sykes. Follow Donut Media, all that stuff at Donut Media. You know the drill. Tell someone about the show. Be kind. Take care of one another.
Take care of your shapes.
If you're trying to quit smoking, me and James have both been there. go and breathe fresh air outside for 5 minutes and that want will disappear.
Or do what I did and just have a heart attack.
See you next time.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Angie has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your jobs projects done well.
I absolutely love this because, you know, if you own a home, it can be really hard to maintain. It's hard to find people that can help you for a big project or a small. Well, whether it's in everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality, it can be hard just to know where to start. But now all you need to do is Angie that and find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need. Angie has over 20 years of home service experience, and they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process. Bring them your project online or with the Angie app, answer a few questions, and Angie can handle the rest from start to finish. Or help you compare quotes from multiple pros and connect instantly, which means you can take care of just about any home project in just a few taps, because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this when you Angie that. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I.com.